Hi, it's Richard Felix here. Welcome to my podcast. Over the past 20 years, I've been doing the ghost tour of Great Britain, visiting some of the most haunted places in the British Isles and interviewing, talking to hundreds of people and getting their amazing accounts of what's happened to them, seen them, heard them, sensed them, felt ghosts. Some of it's absolutely, well, some of it will actually blow your minds. And I can assure you that this is real. What they've seen and heard and sensed is more than Scooby-Doo. It's reality. In this podcast, I'm going to be talking to some of the people that I've interviewed that have been conducting ghost tours around Great Britain, just like I've been doing for the past 28 years. One of the most fascinating ones is Davy the Ghost from Inverness. So I want you to settle back and just listen to some of these fascinating people telling their ghost stories. Right, I'm in Inverness, capital of the Highlands. With me, Davy the Ghost. You do, amongst other things, ghost tours around Inverness.
What else is it to do when you're dead?
Well, how long have you been dead?
174 years.
That's quite a long time. And still haunting?
Visiting.
Well, that's what it's all about. So, come on, tell us all about it. What have you got? It's steeped in it, isn't it? I mean, the Highlands.
Well, Inverness, the hub of the Highlands, the mysterious place, the Great Fault.
Yeah.
The most haunted town in Britain.
In Britain?
In Britain.
Really?
And I can say that quite safely, because we've got at least six or seven active ghosts at the moment, seen by many people.
Here? In Inverness?
In Inverness itself.
Wow. Tell me, have you got...
Well, one of the most haunted places is Inverness Telephone Exchange.
Really?
They believe they've got a black lady. It's not a black lady. It's a black friar. Because that telephone exchange is actually built on the spot in the old friary. The friary was built in 1233. It was abandoned in the 16th century. Now, on the top floor of the new telephone exchange, when I say new, it's 50 years old.
Right.
But on the top floor, seen by many, many people, is what they think is an old woman just wandering along, and she disappears.
Yep.
I'm perfectly sure that that is actually one of the old friars caught in the watchtower.
Yes.
And he's been seen by many, many people.
Is he, what colour habit is he wearing?
Black.
Black. So probably Dominican or something like that?
Well, Dominican, but black friars were of variations.
Yeah.
Well, it's an interesting spot because if you go there at the back here, Inverness Council, being Inverness Council, put a plaque up to tell you that's where the Greyfriars were.
But there they are.
They were Blackfriars.
That's a good one. So now that, this over here, a marvellous view down the River Ness.
Well, the River Ness, the Black Isle. And the name Black Isle is said to come from the witchcraft.
Right.
Now, Scotland had a shocking history of witchcraft.
I know, you used to burn them as well, not hang them, didn't you?
There was nothing beats a good barbecue. And some of them were actually cooked on the Black Isle in the 17th century.
Really?
And that's where people believe the name comes from. Black Isle. Black magic.
Of course. Yeah, yeah. And the Ness?
I'll give you a story about the Ness.
Yes, please.
Behind me is the River Ness. Now, the River Ness is famous because that's the very first... I'll let you hold that.
Thank you very much.
The Loch Ness Monster was ever seen.
In the river?
In the river. In the year 563, St. Columba came to Scotland to bring Christianity. Columba was a warrior. He'd go about converting people. And if he didn't convert, he killed them. So most people decided to convert. And when he came to Inverness in 565, he came to the River Ness. And he was just about to get in the water and swim to the other side when one of the locals came running out and said to him, "Hey boy, you're going that water and a dirty great beast will come up and eat you." Well, Columba was a brave man, so he sent another man in the water, and he told him to swim to the other side. Well, sure enough, as the man got halfway across the water, up rose this huge monster. Well, Columba ran forward, held up his crucifix, and he said, "Go away, you nasty beast." And it did go away, but it didn't go very far. It went 4 miles up the river to Loch Ness, and it's been there for the last 1,500 years, so it's due its pension shortly. However, the people of Inverness had a much better use for the River Ness, because Scotland had the worst history in the whole of Europe for witchcraft and demonology. In fact, between 1479 and 1722, we burnt 17,000 witches.
That's a lot of people.
Now, in those days, if someone accused you of being a witch, you're a witch! You had to prove your innocence. Either way, you lost. Now, they would take you down to the river, and they would tie this thumb to that toe, vice versa, pick you up, and throw you right into the deepest part. And if you drowned, sorry, you're innocent, go home. However, if you floated, you were guilty, and you'd be taken away and burnt. A very fair system. Now, in those days, there wasn't any central heating, so the women wore lots of clothes and large skirts.
Yep.
And when they were thrown in the water, this something created an air pocket, and it would pop right back up. Well, the first thing that would happen there was the husband would run forward with a large pole and he would hold his wife under the water till she drowned. The reason for that was simple. As I said, if she floated, she was guilty, and he'd be an associate to witchcraft and he'd be burnt, and he wasn't going to have that, was he?
Wow. Now, didn't know that.
Do you know what they actually did with the witches? Well, let me just give you an example of one family. In 1595, they brought the Balfour family from the Orkney Isles down here, and they tortured them for the crimes of witchcraft. The youngest member of the family, the daughter, who was just 7 years old, had the pennywinks applied, the thumb screws. And the thumb screws were always based here, at the base of the nail, thus being the most sensitive part. And then they were tightened. And tightened. And tightened. Until the farm exploded. The brother was placed to the boot. The boot was placed round the calf of the leg at such an angle. When large wedges were driven in, the foot would crush. The blood would spurt out. Not only the blood, the very bone marrow itself. The mother was placed to the vice. With the vice, the hands were tied round the back at such an angle. When she was hoisted to the ceiling, the shoulders were dislocated. Then large weights were tied round her ankles. And she was left hanging like that for 2 days and two nights. The father was pressed to death. With pressing, you were tied very tightly to a rack. A board was placed on the chest. And weights were added one at a time, so each rib would crack until the final weight was added. And the entire rib cage would collapse inwardly, piercing the very body organs themselves. And this was only one family. Other than that, witchcraft, not a problem.
So basically, Davey, that's one of the reasons that you've got so many ghosts. You've got so many tormented souls, basically.
Well, yeah? I don't know if they're tormented souls. They could be quite happy in their hauntings.
Well, true. Now look, you do these throughout the year, I presume? Tours around
365 days a year.
Really?
Ghosts don't get a day off.
And how can they, if people want to come, because they will want to come on one of your ghost walks, I can assure you, when they've heard this, how can they get in touch?
Well,
tourist information?
They can phone me, they can go to the Tourist Information Centre, or they can phone me and book, or they can email me. Being a ghost, unfortunately, I've had to start hunting the net.
Of course. Davey, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for telling me just a few of the stories that you feature on the walk. Yeah, and I don't know whether I can grasp your hand being a ghost.
You can.
Or will I go through you?
Me.
Will it?
Yeah.
All right, well, thanks ever so much.
I don't have any nightmares, will you?
I won't. And I'm now in the centre of Norwich. With me, Dave, Ghostly Dave, as they've nicknamed you in the newspapers, yeah? And of course you do the infamous, the famous Norwich Ghost Walk.
That's right.
And it starts and finishes here?
Yep, at the Adam and Eve.
And I presume there's a reason for that.
There is. The Adam and Eve is the most haunted pub in the city.
Right.
Haunted by a guy by the name of Lord Sheffield.
Yes.
Now, if you know your history, you'll know that shortly before Henry VIII died, he passed a law which stopped the local people from grazing their cattle on common land. Not too popular, as you can imagine.
Yep.
There's riots up and down the country. And the biggest riot of all in the entire country took place here in Norwich.
Really?
A guy by the name of Robert Kett, who, believe it or not, was a landowner himself. But anyway, he marched into Norwich to overthrow the law, and a lot of people think he marched to Norwich to actually bring down the king.
All right.
The king sent an army led by Lord Sheffield to throw Robert Kett back out of the city. They met just on this road here. You imagine Lord Sheffield and his army in one direction, Robert Kett and his men in the opposite.
Right.
The battle broke out, and during the course of the battle, Lord Sheffield realised he was going to lose it. So he did the only thing he could think of, took off his helmet, revealed his identity, thinking he'd be taken a famous hostage. Bit unfortunate. There's a guy, a butcher by the name of Folks, and he decided he'd rather have a famous scalp than a famous hostage. And with his meat cleaver, he hacked Lord Sheffield across the side of the neck. Sheffield fell dying to the floor just on the corner there. The rest of the King's men fled. Robert Kett and his army went back to the hills. King's men came back, picked up their leader, who was barely alive, carried him into the Adam and Eve.
Good
That's
grief.
Where he died.
In this, so this was here, all
pub.
Those...
Yeah, this pub has been here for, 1249 it's still. Oldest
My
pub
goodness.
Ever since he's died, he's been seen wandering around up and down this area, up and down the stones, and inside the pub itself. If you ask the landlord, or ask the young girls who work behind the bar, they'll all tell you at one time or another, walking up the stairs, maybe carrying a box of crisps, crate of ale, somebody runs their finger through their hair. They don't even bat an eyelid anymore. It's like an old friend of the family.
Mm.
And we've got some tankards hanging up in the downstairs bar. Very often when the pub's almost empty, these tankards will just suddenly start to sway from side to side. No wind, no doors open, but they just sway. And if you stop them, they start swaying again. A couple of years ago, we were in the bar. One of them started to drip. There's about 9 people in the bar, the young girl behind it. And we all watched as it dripped and splashed on the counter. And finally, we went over to see what it was. Not only was that counter absolutely bone dry, so was the tankard. And we'd all watch it drip from one to the other. That's the work of Lord Sheffield.
Wow. I say. You don't think it was his blood dripping then or something like that?
I hope it wasn't. If Good. It was, he's lost quite a lot by now.
So it's an ideal place, of course, to start the walk from.
It is, yeah.
But you've got somewhere else that you can take us, show us something.
I can take you and show you the young lady we called the saddest ghost in the city. She's also known as the Lady in Grey, and she has a very, very sad story to tell.
Really? Shall we go to hello?
That's why not.
Great, thank you. This way? Right. Right, now, I presume on the left of me here, Norwich Cathedral.
Cathedral, yeah.
Yeah, and this, I've never seen anything like
it.
It's called Tombland Alley.
Yeah, Tombland Alley. In fact, even the locals don't know this exists, you know. People we've been down here who've lived in Norwich all their lives say, never knew this alleyway was here.
Yes, I get
People
similar.
Just walk straight past it.
It's amazing.
It's a lovely house.
How old is it?
1549, and by coincidence, is the very house that Lord Sheffield stayed in the night before he went on to be killed by Robert Kett.
Good grief.
Yeah, the very house.
Absolutely amazing. And another church here, of course.
Yeah, this is the church. This is where we used to have a rather swift punishment for our looters of plague victims. If you were caught looting the victim of a plague... If you were caught looting a plague victim, you were taken to this church, taken to the top of the battlements. You had your hands tied behind your back, your legs tied together, and then you were dropped head first to land just in front of those wooden doors.
Oh, lovely.
Lovely, wasn't it?
And then, buried in the plague pit there.
With the rest of them.
Fantastic. Oh, I say. Now, have you got something else for me? You have, haven't you? I know you have.
I can tell you the story about Sarah.
Right.
The saddest ghost in the city. She's also known as the Lady in Grey. Now, as you may know, when we used to have the plague visit the city, so everybody in the house had died from the plague, the bailiffs would come along and lock the doors, bolt all the doors, cover all the windows, put big red crosses all over the paintwork and leave the dead bodies inside.
Yeah.
That was so that they wouldn't spread the plague any further. Well, we had a really bad plague in Norwich, 1578, brought to the city by Queen Elizabeth I.
Right.
Sure enough, everybody in this house had died of the plague.
Right.
So they thought. Along came the bailiffs, covered over all these windows, bolted all the doors, big red crosses everywhere, went away for 5 or 6 weeks.
Yep.
When they came back, 5 or 6 weeks later, they found something rather awful. The young girl who had lived in this house with her parents and servants had in fact been alive when they locked her inside. Now just imagine how she must have felt when she woke up to find herself in a house locked and bolted from the outside, all the windows boarded over, a house with nothing to eat, nothing to drink, no food or water. She must have known she was going to die.
Yeah.
Sure enough, she did. The way she died was rather horrific. When they came back, the bailiffs, and dragged all the bodies out, they found unusual marks on the legs of the mother, the father. Teeth marks. But not teeth marks made by the rats that used to run through these houses. These were human teeth marks. When they examined the rest of the bodies, they found bits and pieces of dead flesh jammed in the throat of the young girl we now call the Lady in Grey. She'd actually choked to death trying to eat the flesh of her own parents' legs. That's why we say she is the saddest ghost in the city, and why very often she can still be seen wandering all around Augustine Stewart House, up and down this alleyway, and even the vicar of the church here has told me
Through the church itself, through one door and out the other. What a sad lady.
What a story. And of course, lots and lots more stories on the Norwich Ghost
lots
Walk.
Lots of stories. We have so many stories, we do two different walks during the course of the week. We can't get them all in on one night.
Really?
Yeah.
And when do you do them, Dave?
We do the walks, we start in May, the first bank holiday in May. We go right through to the end of September. We do them four nights a week. The Monday and Tuesday walk is the same. The Wednesday and Thursday walk is the same. Then we have a fairly short break, and then we come back for what we call our Halloween specials, which are totally different to other walks.
Yeah.
The facts go out the window and fiction comes in. It's just a case of making people jump as much as we can.
Well, that's what people like.
They do like it. It's good fun.
Amazing. And how do they book?
They don't need to book for the actual ghost walks. They just turn up at the pub on the night of the Adam and Eve.
Oh, I see.
We sell tickets for the Halloween walks, but we have to keep the numbers down because of certain places we go on that one. They can buy those either on the night or at the pub on the walks.
Fantastic. Dave, it's been a privilege to wander around a city as ancient as this. I've never seen anything like it. I'm absolutely gobsmacked that there's so many old buildings left.
And all got a story.
Yeah, thank you very much indeed.
You're welcome, thanks for joining us.
Thanks. Right, well I'm literally right underneath the South Bridge in the centre of Edinburgh. With me is Fran.
Hello.
Fran, you are historian, storyteller, assistant director for Mercat Tours.
That's right, yes, I am indeed, and I've been down here many, many times before, so...
Well, this is my first time, so...
I'll be gentle with you.
Thank you very much. This is really quite something. I've never seen anything quite like it before.
It's very atmospheric, isn't it?
What is it?
Well, what we're actually going into now is a set of underground vaults.
Yeah.
Beneath the South Bridge. Now, they were built at the same time as the bridge in the 18th century.
Yes.
But they were divided up and used as workshops and as storage areas and as houses for people who had businesses on the bridge. So at one point, there would have been maybe 100, 200 people working and living...
Down here.
And it was always underground. It was never on street level.
I see. And so this would be... There'd be lots and lots of houses and businesses above us.
Mm-hmm, yep.
And this is the lowest level.
Exactly. Yeah. We're about three levels below the bridge level, the street level, where all the houses and the shops are now. But underneath that is what we're just about to go and see.
Right. Do you want to lead on?
Shall we?
Yes, please.
Let's go.
It's so extensive.
Bit of a rabbit warren, isn't it?
Just a bit, yeah. I would imagine that you wouldn't send people down here on their own because they'd quite easily get lost.
We'd never wander off alone.
Wow.
It's a labyrinth, and we might be able to find you again.
And look at it stretching right down. There, my goodness. What's this?
This is one of the largest rooms. It's actually one room on top of another, and the ceiling missing. But it gives you a very good idea of the structure of the bridge.
Yeah.
Because way up through that gap is the arch of the bridge itself. There are 19 stone arches that hold up the South Bridge. And that's what we're underneath at the moment.
And that's literally up here.
All the way up there.
Wow.
And most of the vaults were built of stone, but a lot of the ceilings were built of brick, which is quite unusual for the 18th century. You know, when we first started coming down here, on our ghost tours, we told people good, old-fashioned, traditional Edinburgh ghost stories.
Yes, yeah.
About 6 weeks after we started coming down here, somebody said they saw something. And it's just gone on from there. Hardly a week goes by without somebody saying that they've felt or heard or seen a ghost.
So you've disturbed something that's probably been lying dormant for a couple of hundred years, if you like.
These rooms were closed off in about 1815, and they were
right.
Not discovered again until a few years ago. So nearly 200 years these rooms have been abandoned and empty. And perhaps we have stirred them up a little bit.
Yeah.
But lots of people claim to have seen things. This is one of the more active rooms.
Oh, really? Anywhere in particular? Because I do just happen to have an EMF meter with me, which of course is supposedly detects electromagnetic fields. So. Who knows? There's no electricity down here, of course. Absolutely nothing. So if we were to pick anything up, It would be somebody's electromagnetic field, but... I think he's out. I don't think he's here today. But of course, you must remember that ghosts don't appear to audiences.
They don't perform on demand, do they?
No. Very much so. But we'll try elsewhere.
I think we should. You might like to try in that corner again.
Okay.
See what happens. I've never seen one of these before.
It's an electromagnetic field detector. Now, something, but I mean, it could. I mean, there are, I must be honest, there are, there's an electric cable above.
Yeah.
So it could well be. But has anybody been seen there?
Oh, yes.
Oh, really?
That's why I wanted to see if there was anything on there before I told you. I'm so sneaky, aren't I?
No, that's what it's all about, really. Yes. And of course, I've never been down here before and I didn't even know it existed.
No, you haven't.
So, and what's been seen there?
There's a lady in that corner. She's really more, she's been described more as an elemental than a ghost. She's a very, very angry, very bitter spirit, and she's more energy than
really?
She is.
Yes, I wonder.
She's fixed to her spot.
Yes.
And she makes her presence known. If somebody actually, you know, it has been known for people to stand in that corner and get, a jab or a shove because she's...
Really?
She's been described as the most powerful spirit.
Dare I do it?
But she can't go anywhere. She can't move. She can't get out. And she's very angry. She's not happy lady at all.
No, can't sense it. But as I said earlier, I don't see dead people. Excuse me.
Got something?
Well, there looks like seems to be a pit or a hole of some sort. Now.
Well, there's no electric power cables in here at all. There's no electric light in this room. There's no power source nearby.
Can't see any cables. There's a candle, then it won't be that.
Yeah.
Is this a room, a haunted room, or?
Yes, people do claim to have seen things in here, and this was a caretaker or a security guard's room.
Right.
But quite a lot of people claim to have felt or seen.
But I mean, there's a distinct sort of hole or.
Yes. There is, yes. We think that the person who worked here had a midden.
Which is a rubbish tip, of course. A rubbish pit, I presume. Is that right?
Exactly, yep. We found bits of broken bone and broken pot and just scraps and bits and pieces of, well, just life, really. Somebody's rubbish thrown into the corner.
So someone spent a lot of time in here?
Yep.
Lived in here, almost.
I would say so, given that there's a fireplace.
Oh, yes, of course.
It's not an industrial fireplace. It's not.
No, it's not, is it?
It's not used for a foundry or a bread oven or anything.
No.
It's a domestic fireplace. You're right, I think somebody either lived in here or spent a lot of time in this particular room. So we've had quite a lot of people claim to feel heat coming from the fireplace. And some people have felt it quite strongly to the point where they've had to move away from the fire because it's burning their leg.
Yeah.
There's also, well, I would be lying if I said lots of people have seen the guard. Mm. I think about two or three people claim to have seen a man, but a lot of people claim to have seen his little friend.
Really?
He has a companion, four legs and a tail, who runs around the vaults, going woof!
Oh, a ghost of a dog.
Mm-hmm. It's a very friendly dog. It's not very, if it's a guard dog, it's not a very good guard dog.
Really?
He's very affectionate. We think it's just a friend, a companion, a pet.
Yeah.
But he runs around the vaults. But we think he belongs in here, but he does run about all over the place. If you do feel something furry...
Brush past your feet. Leg, it's him, is it?
Give it a pat, yes.
I will do just that, yeah. But I hope
it
don't.
Maybe it's him sitting in the corner, I don't know.
Could be, couldn't it? Amazing, that was.
No, that's strange.
And to the left?
You lose your sense of direction.
I know, that's exactly... Well, it's so big, it's so extensive...
Disorienting.
...that I sort of, you know, you'd soon get yourself lost down here, wouldn't you? We're standing in the centre of Edinburgh. This is the Murcott Cross. I've heard a lot about it. It's obviously to do with executions and beheadings. But Fran, can you tell me more about it?
Indeed. The company that I work for is called Murcott Tours.
Oh, well.
Because we start all our tours at the Murcott Cross. It's really the traditional heart of the old city,
yes,
of Edinburgh. We're standing right in the middle of the old town.
Yeah.
One of the theories as to why Edinburgh has so many ghosts is that it has so many old buildings still standing. We're very lucky that we have so many old houses and medieval buildings,
yes,
that are still here. And it's said that there are more ghosts here than any other place in Scotland because of that, because,
yep,
of the age of the buildings. The Murcott Cross, as you quite rightly point out, was used for executions. It was the marketplace.
Yes.
Murcott means the market.
Yep.
This is where merchants traded. It's also where they made proclamations. From the top of the cross there, the heralds would come along and announce the news. But the people of Edinburgh came here more than anything else to be entertained. And this would come in the form of punishments. For example, if you were a merchant and you'd given somebody the wrong change, you'd given them, you know, shortchanged them, your hand would be taken and it would be nailed to the door of the Murcott Cross.
Right.
You'd have to stand there for half an hour or the morning or 2 days or however long your punishment happened to be. We also have a story that we tell here which involves a whip. A cat o' nine tails, to be exact.
Yes.
And we reenact a punishment at the Murcott Cross that happened to two Englishmen in the 17th century. It's a very nasty story, but you have to come out late at night to hear that one.
Of course.
It's a bit scary. But my favourite one was the one called the Branks, which was a big metal brace that fitted over the head with a spike that went into your mouth. And it was reserved for nagging women.
Oh yes, and we have a scold's bridle in England.
It's very similar to the scold's bridle, that's right. Or if women were gossiping about their friends, then they would put them in the bridle as well. And the main, if you were obviously an ordinary peasant,
yeah,
all sorts of tortures and executions, but if you're a member of the nobility,
yes,
you were granted the gift of having your head chopped off. And this was done by the maiden, which was it's like a guillotine, but it had a flat blade. So it usually took about two or three goes before they finally managed
to
sever those final different
pins. So they'd have to, would it be sort of hoisted similar to a guillotine,
yeah,
dropped, and then dropped again, and then dropped again to make...
Until eventually the head would be hacked off.
My goodness.
It was unbelievably brutal.
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
So it's no wonder that there's
so many tormented souls, I would imagine, wandering
exactly
around this area.
Exactly.
Amazing. That is super. Thank you. We're in Londonderry. With me is Tommy Carlin, who is a guide for the city.
Yes.
You do ghost walks, of course, as well as ordinary ones, hence the fact we're here.
Yep.
And we're in a strange place, a rather interesting start. We're actually at the local workhouse.
We are, yes. Just
and these are the original steps?
This is the original entrance to the workhouse here.
Gosh.
And people came here, entered the workhouse, up these steps, which are 13 steps.
Oh, no.
Yes, 13 steps.
Right.
Very famous ones here, because this is where people came into. The building just behind was the reception area,
yes,
for the workhouse itself.
Yeah.
When they get into this building, and through the doors here, they were separate by gender and by age as well.
Yeah.
And boys to the right, girls to the left, this one. But anyone who was punished, there were two punishment rooms here as well, again separate, just inside.
That's in this building?
It's this building here, which is now an office of a local building supply.
Right.
And this window here, to the right of the door, was into where this punishment area was.
Yes.
And in the time was being used here, there were two children were punished for some misdeed or other.
Yeah.
And the matron of the workhouse, she put them in the building one Friday afternoon, apparently.
Yes.
And she locked them in for an indefinite period.
Right.
But she forgot to tell the rest of the people who were coming here at the weekend they were there. And no one was in the reception area at all during the weekend. Come back Monday morning, the two children were found dead in this room from lack of oxygen as well.
Yeah.
And she was so overcome with remorse for this that she asked to be buried just here at the top of these steps. And this is where this matron...
Is that where she is buried?
This is where she's buried, here at the top of these steps.
The top of 13 steps?
At the top of the 13 steps is where she's buried.
Oh my gosh.
And her ghost or apparition is often seen walking along this area here, just above the road. People walking in the roadway just outside at night will often see this long grey coated figure walk along this particular area here.
So she's quite a famous landmark in Derry.
She's very well known here in the city. The matron buried at the top of the 13th step.
Well, well, well.
And as was a sort of remorse and regret that she had caused the children's death, she asked to be buried as near where they died as possible.
My goodness.
That was her request.
Fantastic. And is the moor inside? Can we have a look inside?
Yes, the moor inside. Behind this area was the main dormitory area.
Yep.
The top drawer of that, we'll go and have a look at that.
Oh yes,
that's where the children's dormitory was, and again related to the two children who died.
Fine.
And here this
lead on.
Okay, just around the corner.
Right, now Tommy, this is the workhouse museum.
Yes,
but this of course was the real workhouse.
This upper floor of the workhouse was the dormitory for the children here.
Yeah,
this is where, as I said, they were separated in the reception area. Even here, they were still separated. And
right.
Over to our right behind there was the girls' dormitory.
Yep.
And then over behind this here, through this door and staircase, was the boys' dormitory. And even then, there's still separate staircases up to here.
So really? So they were completely segregated?
Completely segregated.
All the time? Or?
All the time, completely segregated. Yeah. The only time that they met together was at church service on a Sunday, and there were different denominations had different times for the services. And
wow.
Even their separate aisles were for men and women.
Yeah.
And the back of the church was, again, separate boys and girls, and they never really were allowed to meet. Just a little
wave. So they could wave to each other?
Just a little wave to each other.
Can we have a look in there?
We can look in there. Before that, perhaps we will look at this device you see, this box here.
What is it?
It's really the hearse or coffin. And this was used here during the famine times. And often three or four bodies would be put in that, taken out on a cart, taken to the nearest cemetery. And you see how it looked on top of this little cone piece. There was a little pennon put there, either black and white, depending on whether the bodies were male or female.
And so. My goodness me. And how did they get them out?
Well, at this end of it here, there was a door here, really, just a flap of this one.
Oh, here?
This here, yes.
Yeah? So that opened. Oh, it's hinged. That came open, yeah?
Open. The cart was tipped up on hooked from the donkey. The cart tipped up and the body simply fell out of that door.
Into a pit.
It was called a famine pit. And adults, there have been two or three when they were children, often four or five children, and that together. And
that was buried.
Because that depended on what deaths there were discovered each morning in the workhouse. This is during the famine time.
Wow, and you've got a representation in here of what it looked like.
We've got a representation of what this area looked like, this dormitory looked like.
Yeah, yeah.
See, the stairs here again were for.
Yeah, these were segregated. Children, boys one side,
the girls side.
Oh, I say, yeah. Wow. And this young lady, I presume she's dead?
Yes, and it's a representation really of what often happened. Children were born here, and this lady would have died in childbirth.
Good grief.
And the doctor here
in
the centre aisle would have been signed her death certificate
at
that time. And the aisle itself was really the toilet here, because
this
little channel running along here was laid each day with fresh straw.
Yep.
Used at night time as a toilet.
Yeah.
At the very far end, you can't see in the darkness, there was a door there out onto the gable wall of the building.
Yeah.
And beneath that, they would have had a cart where all this material was swept out this morning to that.
My
and fresh doll later
goodness.
The rest of the day in this time.
Good. Tell me, I mean, how many people, we don't know how many people, but we're talking hundreds, thousands of people that would have died?
To hold 800 people.
Yeah.
In the 4 years before the famine, there was only 60 or 70 people used it because of the connection with the workhouse and poverty. But by the end of the famine in 1849, there were 1,200 people here.
My God. Do you know, there's a strange sensation in here. Well, there's got to be. When you think about it.
All sorts of stories about this building here in this area.
Well, when you think of the number of people that have died under tormented conditions in here. That's obviously. I mean, obviously there are ghost stories up here.
Stories as well, and as I said, often the people who even work here, the staff in this museum, will often tell you that they often hear footsteps of groups of people walking along here. They come to investigate. There's absolutely nothing to be seen.
Gosh.
And we had one local gentleman from the local press here volunteer to stay one night here as well. He at 4:15 in the morning he fled the building.
Oh my God.
Because of the noises and the feelings. And even when he sat down, he felt a pressure on his shoulders of a presence being in the room with him as well. And he had done many visits like this. This was the most eerie and dreadful place he was ever
in. Now, your wife also had experiences here.
She did. She, for a time, this workhouse was used as a general hospital here, and she worked as a nurse here. And often when she came in to visit some old people in some of the what were the wards in the lower floor, they told her that the nurse had already been.
Yep.
So in question, they told her the nurse that was there was tall, had a long grey dress, and had a funny little white hat on her head as well. And she had tended to them before my wife had ever come to them. This was always at night time.
Yeah.
And she often felt a strange presence around here as well. Yeah. And often when she'd come here, she'd see lights in windows.
Yeah.
That rooms were not occupied. And yet when you got there, there was no light to be seen.
So this is a very haunted place.
This is one very haunted building. Yeah. Indeed. Yes,
Tommy, tell me, you make an awful lot of Halloween here in Londonderry.
We do. Halloween is one of, in fact, the biggest festival we have here from the point of view of bringing people into the city. And Halloween night itself, we have 35,000 people would be on the streets. All of them in fancy dresses like ghosts and ghouls and others, policemen, soldiers, whatever you can think of. Yeah. And you get themes from time to time as well. For example, when you had last year, Harry Potter was on the big theme. Yeah. Lots of Harry Potters and wizards about as well. Yeah. And it starts with the firework display on the river. All the families gather each at the river for that. And after that, there's music performances in the city centre all around. And then as the night grows older, it's a more adult thing, and it's the bars really benefit from that. And each bar would have a competition for the best costume that night. So for months before, already this time of year, early on the summer here, there are people designing costumes for Halloween night.
And you do ghost tours?
And the whole week before Halloween, I do ghost tours right around the city and buildings like this, other little stories as well of other buildings that are haunted, areas of the city that are haunted as well. And the ghost tour takes an hour and a half to do.
Yeah, and you can book it
start at the Tourist Information Centre, and the tours go right around the city each night. Often we have maybe four tours per night because it's a popular event here.
Yeah.
And normally begins exactly a week before Halloween night.
So if you want a haunted place to come in Great Britain for Halloween, you need to come to Londonderry.
Yes, this is the place to be.
Fantastic.
If you want frightened for Halloween,
come to Londonderry.
I'm here on Halloween week and Halloween night.
Tommy, that's been fantastic. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Okay.
Now, we're in Tenby at the seaside. Most magnificent place. I haven't been here since 1975. Strangely enough, the year that Marion Davies also came to Tenby.
That's right.
And you're here to tell me some ghostly stories, because you do ghost walks.
Indeed.
So anything juicy for us? Anything interesting?
Well, I think probably one of the most common stories, and I find it recurs time and time again, is the story of the corpse candle, which is basically an omen of death. And I mean, there are all sorts of omens of death around Wales. There was the Tolaeth, which was the voice of death or the knocking sound.
Yes.
The Haraeth, which was a moaning, groaning banshee. The Derin, of course, was the bird of death, and it could really be any bird, really. But the Canwyll Corph, the corpse candle, I think has been seen so many times around here. And one particular story relates to a school teacher who apparently was in lodgings just outside Tenby. And one night she awoke, saw the corpse candle in her room, screamed, brought the whole household running to her aid. And by that time, it had disappeared. However, some 6 weeks later, her landlady, who was a strong young woman who was in perfect health originally, she died. And this young woman, who was actually away at the time, was recalled to the farmhouse for the funeral and was taken to pay her respects in what was previously her room and laid out in exactly the spot that she had seen that corpse candle, the omen of death.
Oh my goodness.
Mm.
Oh, I say.
Yeah, so that's a very typical story. And there have been so many corpse candle experiences. Also the Fetch funeral, which again is an omen of death. And this is where you're going to see perhaps some kind of funeral procession.
Yeah, a ghostly one.
A ghostly funeral procession that would herald a real procession.
I see. So the ghostly one would be seen, and then days later or something like that, someone would die, and the actual funeral would then be reenacted, for want of a better word, but yes. In real life.
Yeah, just on the outskirts of Tenby, but sort of between, well, in fact, just outside the village of Penally, there was a very famous one. In 1861, apparently, the vicar of Penally, his serving man, was courting the maid at a local farm, Holloway Farm. And on his way back, very late one evening, he actually witnessed a funeral, a ghostly funeral procession. It was coming towards him closer and closer. And suddenly he realised these were people that he actually knew. He could recognise faces and could make them out amongst the crowd. He realised he was now suddenly directly in their line. And so he pressed against the hedge to try and keep out of their way. But despite that, he was apparently kicked and scratched and beaten. And the following morning, when the vicar saw him, he was absolutely staggered. He wanted to know what had happened to him. And so he explained he'd seen this funeral procession, that they'd come towards him, he recognised people, he listed the people, and then he said, to his utter amazement, as they got to the end of to a bend in the road further down, suddenly the procession had gone up through the hedge and taken the direct route down to the churchyard. Now, the man didn't believe him, the vicar just didn't believe him, accused him of drinking, fighting, and punished him. But some weeks later, the tenant of the farm, Holloway Farm, died, and the vicar was called to give comfort to the family. And whilst he was there, he was given a list of funeral arrangements and so on, and was utterly amazed to see that the list comprised exactly of all the
same people
this man had related to him previously. The night before the funeral, apparently there was a snowfall, a terrible frost, and so the following day of the funeral, the procession made their way through the lanes, and suddenly they came to the bend in the road, and there the route was obliterated by a bank of snow that had gathered there, so they couldn't really see which way to go, and they took the route up through the hedge and across the field in the direct manner that this man had
seen
his master. And the vicar of Penally said there was absolutely no explanation for it. He just couldn't find any. It simply was,
one supernatural experience
of a fetch or phantom funeral.
Amazing. That's a good one. Now we've got more stories, of course. Up to Castle Hill next.
Yep.
Okay. Shall we go?
Yep.
You lead on, because I don't know the way. So, Marion, we're actually now on Castle Hill.
Yep.
All that's left, basically, is that piece of castle up there.
Well, there is a gatehouse further down the hill, and there are little bits of wall, but on the top of the Castle Hill, that's the main thing, really.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
Now, behind us here is St. Catherine's Island.
Yep.
But it looks so much like Alcatraz, you wouldn't believe it. I mean, it's not a prison, is it, up there?
No, it was a fort. It was part of the defences of this area, particularly in view of the fact we had Milford Haven and Pembroke Dock, which were naval dockyards. So this was built in anticipation of an attack that may occur by the French, really, and Napoleon III. It's at the same time as this was being built, the things like the Martello Towers and so on, around the coast, and other defences.
Yeah. Again. Now we have, of course, a ghostly story to do with the island and the area around here, of course.
Yeah. Well, apparently, sometime around the mid-16th century, the people of Tenby were really very shocked and surprised one stormy night to see a ghostly vessel travelling across Carmarthen Bay here.
Yeah.
Now, it was being tossed and turned in apparently most ferocious ways. It was absolutely appalling weather, and they could see ghostly figures and sort of firelights, they said, on the deck of the boat, but were absolutely terrified by ghostly wailing noises and
Good
so on.
Lord.
And so rushed back to their houses and waited.
Locked the doors.
Yes, locked the doors, exactly. But the following morning, they came back down to the castle beach here, expecting to see masses of wreckage up and down, but there was nothing to be seen except the body of a young man who was just lying here on the beach. Now, apparently he was dressed in strange clothing. It seemed that he was, I think he looked dead, but in fact he was asleep and was actually woken by the birds overhead, they say. Of course, the people of Tenby rushed down to offer him food and water, invited him back to their houses, but he refused to come into Tenby and instead preferred to go and live here on St. Catherine's Island. Now, apparently he was there for quite some long time and was a very familiar figure that would be seen around about the rocks there. prior to the fort being up on the island there, there was apparently a little chapel to St Catherine, and I can't exactly tell you how old it is, or what it might have been. It was demolished to make way for the fort, but perhaps he did take shelter.
Yes.
I wouldn't really like to say. But a shepherd that worked his flocks around the cliffs here took pity on the man, and because winter was approaching, decided he'd go over and invite him to come back and stay with his family. So went over to the island, again took food and water, and he found the man sitting on a rock at the back of the island looking out to sea. Now, the man again refused to come into Tembe, he just wouldn't come in. But it was at that time he began to tell his tale. Now, he said he was a pirate chief, and he said that during his career he'd committed terrible atrocities, him and his crew, that all the crew had been lost in a storm, and that his boat had been manned by ghosts and spirits. He said that he had killed the one that loved him best in a violent fit of temper. He'd killed her. But he said since that time, sea maidens had come to him at night here on the island and told him that she had forgiven him and that she was now at rest. Now, during the course of relating this story, suddenly he leapt up, pointed to some waves that were rolling on to the towards the island, and said to this shepherd, "Look, look, look, there she is, upon the billow's crest, upon the wave." And with that, he threw himself into the water here, just below the island, and was drowned.
Gosh.
As I say, today's lovely day here. The sea is calm.
Very tranquil.
I can tell you, in the winter, it is wild. Horrendous waves, really very dangerous, just around the island, and there was nothing that could be done.
No chance to get in, get him out.
No. And since then, no sightings have been made of him, but the people of Tembe, it said, those that became acquainted then with his story through the shepherd, hoped that he'd found his rest at last, that he was at peace with himself after all the terrible crimes he'd committed. Now, I will tell you that, in fact, this this area was very much troubled by the activities of the Barbary Corsairs, who were pirates who came from North Africa, and it may well be the case that this was actually a Barbary Corsair that was down on his luck in a most desperate way.
Wow. Hence the fact they mentioned strange clothes, of course.
Yes.
That is fantastic. Now tell me, we're here talking to you because you actually do the Tenby Ghost Walks. All year round, or?
Well, they are available all year round, but it's in the summer really that I'm on a regular timetable of 6 days a week.
Oh my gosh.
And, I leave up in town by the Lifeboat Tavern, leave at 8 o'clock, 6 nights of the week, and the walk takes an hour and a half.
So anybody wants to come on a ghostly tour of Tenby, come and see you.
Exactly.
Fantastic. That is wonderful. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Thanks.
For more information about everything that I've been doing and am doing, visit my website, richardfelix.co.uk. There you can find all the information about my streaming channel, Netflix, how to book ghost walks, tours, how to book Derby Jail for events, to buy DVDs, books, merchandise, you name it, it's there at richardfelix.co.uk.